You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Good morning, everyone. It is a beautiful day, and welcome to another interesting episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul.
And my name is Rob. I thought you said in-resting, like we're
going
to be resting.
No. Podcasting. The fire is back. The attitude is here, and we are excited to be here.
We are.
Sorry, it was a tough month for me in... hopefully November is almost over. It is.
It
was a tough month for me, Rob.
How come?
Oh, you know exactly why. But anyway, it was a tough month here at DroneU for me. Just a lot of work going on. So much opportunity. It's crazy, but really excited. And also, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has shared the podcast, who has told someone else about it. You know, if you ever listen to NPR, they start a lot of their episodes with support our show and donate money. Well, support our show and give us some online currency. Just share it with someone. That would really help us out. And if you have a question, go to askdroneu.com because we would love to answer it. Whether it's about drones, the cold weather, whether it's about starting your business and having a technical issue with pricing, or maybe it's something deeper than that. Whatever your question is, just make sure to go to askdroneu.com and upload that question. We are excited today because we've got some good questions, actually, in the queue here. We're going to be shooting probably four questions today. So if you notice that we do normally film all of these on one day for the week. So get your questions in. By the way, the recency test is coming up. It's next year in August, but you know it's coming up. Anyway, we have some new material coming out, just FYI, on part 107. And don't confuse us, Drone You, with these guys that stole our name, Drone University USA. They just added a USA thinking that they would be clever. Not clever. Don't confuse us with them. Someone asked a question recently, and I cried in my heart of hearts, and I was a sad little boy, and people will do anything in this world to get their own, you know, to get their own little piece
of the pie.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating. It's like, if your stuff is so good, come up with your own damn name. Anyway, all right, I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. Anyway, please give us a share. Also, we are running a special right now. If you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thedroneu, we've got a special for an annual membership where you get 2 months off. Check it out. If you want to become a member, 26 classes, 27th class is going up this week, and then 28 and 29 are being filmed next week. And then on top of that, I got 3 classes that I'm filming before I head back home to Washington, D.C.
East Coast, here he comes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of exciting and it's kind of not exciting.
No, it's all exciting.
It's exciting to go on vacation and get away from it all.
Yeah.
But it's not exciting because it's the East Coast. And I love the East Coast. That's where I was raised, where I was born, but it's just so competitive. And when you're trying to be like lovey-dovey during the season, you really got to seek it out.
Okay, you're keeping up with the Rockefellers?
You're not trying to.
No, I know, but that's kind of the feeling like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of everywhere you go, it's a race, it's...
Yeah, I'm just glad I'm not going to have my eco boost out there.
Oh, gosh. I am too, or you might not make it back.
That is true. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to the show. It really does mean a lot to us. And thank you to all the new members who have signed up and who are in the Drone U community, that secret private group. We've been talking a lot about, you know, the issue with security and data with DJI and Kevin Finister's paper on, what had happened with the DJI bug bounty. And, you know, the DHS just put out a new document as of August about the same thing. So people are asking questions about doing mapping jobs and how to do really good mapping and maybe not using, DJI products. And that's why we've been talking about the unique which is great. It's an American-made flight controller. It is the Pixhawk 2 flight controller. And also, its data doesn't go anywhere because it's not connected to the internet. So anyway, we've been talking a lot about that, and it's been really interesting. And if you haven't gotten in on the conversation, it's been interesting because people have been talking about some contracts that they had that they might have lost. So I'm going to be running a poll here pretty soon on how many mapping jobs are people getting with government contracting, with just specific institutions, and how many people are losing those because of certain product restrictions.
Yeah.
So I think that that's really important to understand because, you know, these are people's businesses.
Yeah,
and in the end, this whole issue is not going to help out the industry as a whole. You know, I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And I know, you know, DJI listens to this show and I'm very appreciative of that, but it's got to be something that's addressed because in the end, DJI would lose, the drone service providers would lose. Like, there has got to be a solution and quickly. So
Well, and the markets will develop a solution, which I think is a really cool thing about the markets and the economy here in the US. And if there's a need for these services and this particular product won't serve that need, then another product will rise up that will serve that need.
True. And that's what we're actually trying to work on right now. And I'm not going to give away the details on that, but it's something that Rob and I talked about yesterday. And actually, he asked me, is this something that's relevant and crucial to right now? And I would say for YouTube, I think it is.
For you, for YouTube.
Building up those subscribers. So I hope you subscribe to our page. Before we get into today's question, which is about pricing and mapping, which, gosh, guys, it's so important to understand what you're mapping, modeling, how many GCPs you're going to be laying, what is the output. We're going to go over all that and package pricing and also the realistic nature of doing these larger mapping jobs. And maybe, you know, you may want to use some bigger equipment because one of our students, Mr. Joshua Baker, is getting into LiDAR. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about LiDAR is just how much area you can cover in a very short amount of time. Because, you know, with drones, you're doing this cross-hatching pattern, right? It's like if I were to put a laser grid over your head and try to grow back hair, I'd have to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But, you know, with LiDAR, it would just be like, quick scan and we're good to go.
I'm all about LiDAR then.
So anyway, but today's question is brought to you by our friends at videoblocks.com. In fact, I have got a shoot right now where we are doing a deal with a specific real estate group to help train their top-end agents. And they're putting a video on their website to showcase the type of videos that they can do, the marketing plan, and also showcase the realtor in a good light. Well, one of those things that we're doing in that video is showcasing the local area. So this isn't really marketing a house, but rather marketing a business, showcasing multiple houses and whatnot. And, you know, one thing that I think is really interesting is I needed shots of Santa Fe, the downtown area. But I was like, I'm going to go to Santa Fe this weekend with Sarah, have a good time. But there's no foliage. It's all dead.
It's winter. It's pretty much
it feels
not
like,
quite the dead of winter, but it looks like it.
You know, every day waking up to 60 degrees in the morning, it makes me feel pretty good.
Oh, man, I'm loving it, although it's getting cold.
It is.
Anyways,
but
you needed some footage.
I need some footage. So we actually reached out to VideoBlocks because I forgot my login information. And got the login information, and now I'm going through footage of Santa Fe and looking through that to see what type of beautiful footage I can use. And actually, there's a lot of drone stuff on there. So it's really useful. I'm going to be adding in shots of like restaurants and flipping, you know, steaks and enchiladas. Green chili.
Enchiladas, I like that. Christmas style.
You know, hey, Christmas means a whole lot more in New Mexico.
Yes, it does.
But anyway, my point is that I needed a lot of shots. So VideoBlocks has been helping me out and get these different kind of shots to showcase the restaurants and the culture and the plaza and all that. And you can use VideoBlocks too, because like I said, there are thousands of different copyright-free clips and copyright-free audio. And now VideoBlocks is offering that in a bundle. So just go to videoblocks.com/drone, get access to the video and the audio for just $149 a year. Now, Rob, let's talk about our friends at thedroneu.com. If you're not a member of thedroneu.com, well, you probably should be. So anyway, guys,
check it out.
Definitely check it out.
Let us know if you have questions.
Totally. We have a sale going on. Check it out on Facebook.
Hi, I am Adrian too. I am from Mexico. At this moment, a client of ours is asking us to map an area of about 1,000 acres. I wanted to ask you guys, how can I make an estimation of our cost in this project? And what drone and software do you recommend for mapping such a large terrain as this? Also, the best practices. Hope you can answer my question. And thank you very much, guys.
1,000 acres. That's a large area.
That is a very large area. And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on this, because the kind of mapping and modeling we've been doing is with quadcopters, right? With drones. And I'm wondering if that's the direction that you would think something like this needs to be taken.
Well, I think definitely it definitely needs to be taken. The question is what sensor payload? But I want to dig a little deeper really quick, because if he's talking about, there's a couple different scenarios here. If we're mapping that large of an area and there are a lot of trees, and this is being done for, say, the Forest Service, or it's being done for ESRI, or if it's being done for someone trying to create a topographical map, and there's a lot of trees, you would have to use LiDAR.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you're using LiDAR, the reason you would use LiDAR over, say, photogrammetry is because you get a base Earth model. And it's essentially, it's the lasers penetrating the trees and going right to the ground. So that way we get a true idea of what the ground topo is really like.
The contours and all of that.
Mm-hmm, yes. So that's really important. Are there a lot of trees? Next question, are there a lot of buildings? Because if there are a lot of buildings, are they expecting the model to look lifelike? Because if they are expecting the model to look lifelike, then you're looking at LiDAR and photogrammetry. Mm-hmm. See where I'm going with this?
And you're looking at quite a bit of time.
You are looking at about quite a bit of time. Because if they want lifelike models of the buildings, then you're going to have to introduce orbits, free flight motion, and nadir maps, cross-hatching, in addition to if you're already using LiDAR.
And then process all that information.
Exactly. And how long is that going to take? And do you have a computer? And is it in a wooded area? Because if it's in the desert, you can definitely do photogrammetry. But there is another benefit to using LiDAR over photogrammetry. That is the time that it takes to use LiDAR. Right, like I was saying in the beginning of the show, with photogrammetry, we're doing this cross-hatching pattern. And with LiDAR, we're just literally flying in, you know, straight line motions to cover essentially as far as the beam can go out. And depending on what type of LiDAR unit you have, that's going to cover anywhere from, you know, 50 meters to 300 meters. So, I mean, you could literally break this up and have, let's say he's in the desert, there's not many buildings, he's using LiDAR, he could probably get this done in like 3 hours minus laying GCPs. If he's laying GCPs, that's going to probably take him 2 to 3 hours, because he's got to lay in that swath of an area at least probably, you know, 10 to 12 GCPs minimum. And then he's got to talk about which GCPs he wants to lay. Is he going to use something like Propeller? Is he going to use something like, how do I say this? Is he going to use something like Trimble GCPs? There's just a lot that, you know, that goes into it. Now, if he's doing photogrammetry, I actually looked up how long it would take to fly this in a cross-hatching pattern at 400 feet. And it would take, I think it was 6.7 hours of continuous flight. So if you actually break that down, now this is like if you're doing, you're navigating across country and it's like, oh, it's going to take you 18 hours and 9 minutes, not counting your bathroom stops, not counting your restroom stops, not counting the fact that you've got to take the dog out of the car and let it pee every 3 hours, you know,
like, don't take the dog on the mission.
Anyway. It's not really building that in. So let's say we add all that time in and switching out batteries, doing that whole thing. You're really looking at 9 to 10 hours of just straight photogrammetry, not including orbits if there were buildings. Okay.
And ideally 30 batteries or something along those
lines.
Some
ridiculous number of batteries. Right. Yeah. If you're flying an M600, that would literally be like $20,000 of batteries.
Yeah.
Because every set of batteries is like $859.
So, okay.
Think about that.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of, I don't know, equipment. I mean, just everything. It's a big operation.
It is a big operation. So if we were to do that at 400 feet, now here's the thing. We're in the time of year where the days are shorter. it would probably take you 2 days because mm-hmm. the shadows are going to move so much throughout the day that you really can't shoot for 8 hours straight or else your data is going to be thrown off. You really need to shoot for like the middle morning to the middle afternoon before the shadows get too crazy. Now, if you're talking about summer, it may actually be doable, but just barely to shoot 1,000 acres using photogrammetry at 400 feet. You know, and then the next question is, so we've talked about variables. So let's recap this really quick. Foliage. Are there trees? Is he looking for a topo? Are there buildings? Those three things are going to affect the price point. Now, because of time, right? You're looking at 2 days time. Are you going to have multiple pilots doing it? Are you going to have you doing it just alone? That's going to affect the price point as well. Okay. I'm going to keep going here. What is the final output for the client? Is it a point cloud? Is it an object file? There's an issue that we've been running into with a client who's been asking for an object file to do measurements from, which I really didn't understand at first, but it makes a little bit more sense now. But the thing is when you do an object file, your point clouds have to be cleaned up. And that takes a substantial amount of time. I mean, like it took us 3-4 days to get this point cloud cleaned up that was maybe like 10 acres. And
of course, that was a lot of detail and it needed to be beautiful. And mm-hmm. so if that's the case.
Yeah. If you're looking at an object file for the client and it's you got to clean it up, I would add like as far as 1,000 acres goes, I would probably add $6,000 to $7,000 of processing just right there. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So let's just say that we're shooting this with LiDAR. We're laying GCPs. I actually talked to a couple different people and they're making about $35,000 a day or $35,000 for 1,000 acres with a point cloud. So that's significant money.
It is.
You're talking photogrammetry here. If it's a lifelike model, if you have buildings and let's say they need a point cloud model, you're probably looking in the area of say 10 to 15 grand. Now, here's the thing. You're going to get a more lifelike looking model, but you are going to have more restrictions. And in order to process 1,000 acres, you're talking like if you do this on one computer, you're probably talking 2 weeks of just straight running data.
Unless you've got a really, really intense processing computer.
Like dual or quad CPU,
right.
Quad GPU.
Yeah. Custom built.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
I mean, we already have a custom built machine and we've already taxed that thing significantly. So
didn't take long.
No. I want to go back to them and be like, I think we need a dual CPU and a dual GPU. And what would it take to upgrade this machine?
Yeah, we may need
that?
To do that. But so what if this is more of an ag purpose? I mean, because again, he doesn't really say what it's talking about, what the end use is.
That's a great question. If it's an ag purpose, then I think he's, again, looking at LiDAR because he's going to need that bare earth model. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to go below the foliage and really need that topographical information. And then another thing that we're looking at too is, if this is for ag, are they going to be looking for multispectral? Are they going to be looking for hyperspectral? Because if they are, you're getting into fixed wing territory. You're probably going to need something like Precision Hawk. You know, a lot of people say that they like Precision Hawk, and I've heard a lot of people say that they don't like Precision Hawk. What I like about Precision Hawk is it's an end-to-end solution.
Right.
It really is. Here's how you provide the deliverable to your client. Everyone can view this deliverable. Here's how they can interpret the data, and here's how they can use the data, which is really important.
Which we've learned, that is really important. That's mm-hmm. not an easy bridge to gap.
No, it's not.
Or gap to bridge, I think is the right way to say that. Gap to bridge. Because it's really easy, not easy, but relatively, to get all the information, process it, figure all that out, but then you've got to put it in a form that the client can understand and read and use. And yeah, that... becomes much easier.
It totally does. Sorry, I know you're looking at me and what am I doing on my computer? I said I would give people a shout out if they gave us a review and I'm trying to find the post for the people to shout out to. Anyway, but going back to this, you know, a lot of people, so Doug recently had a class and I had to interrupt him during this because I wasn't really happy when he was telling people that I itemize my invoices. And I understand why people itemize their invoices, and I'm totally cool with that. But you've got to provide a package price because you need to know what their deliverable is. If the client doesn't know what the deliverable is, you need to take the time upfront to figure out what are you trying to do with the deliverable. I'm kicking myself in the ass right now because this client asked for an OBJ and he keeps complaining about how it looks. So, okay, let's clean up the point cloud, reprocess OBJ. And now we're talking a week down the line of, you know, essentially money that we're not getting paid. And in all honesty, like, it's kind of ridiculous. And I should have been like, okay, if you need a cleaned up OBJ, the price is going to increase by X. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on our next, you know, set of jobs, I'm definitely going to say like, all right, you need to define the deliverable right now. And if it's a point cloud, this price, which would be a cheaper price.
Right.
If it's an OBJ cleaned up, it's going to be this price because there's a lot of work that goes into it.
I think part of the problem with that and part of the issue that somebody like Adrian's going to have is you've got to be able to explain what the options are.
Exactly.
So with this particular client that you're referring to, I don't even think they knew what they didn't know. And so that becomes part of the conversation is giving them information as to what the options are and the relative cost of those options and the relative benefits of each of those options. If you can communicate that and articulate that well, then you're going to make your life a lot easier. You're going to have a happier client. They're going to feel like they got the value they wanted. There's going to be a lot less unknowns when you get to the other end, in which case it's going to be hard to make them happy.
Agreed. And I think having a proposal up front that says, here are the three package prices. I can map this using photogrammetry. There are no buildings. It's going to be, you know, $7,500 to map it. Processing is going to be, you know, $3,000 to process it. You might get a cheaper, quote from other people, but here is where most of those people fail. Here are three examples of other clients that I've worked with where they got a cheaper deal and they didn't end up getting what they wanted. They didn't get the facade detail. Like, essentially point out to them where the other person would fail, because I've taken on jobs where other people said that they could do mapping and modeling, but they didn't know the intricacies of tying maps together, why cloud processing is not good for large area maps or complex maps. They didn't understand, you know, how to get facade detail. And if you just lay that out up front and say, like, you know, this is a high level, high quality map. You're going to see this, you're going to see this, you're going to see this. Here are three prices. If you want LiDAR for 1,000 acres and you want a rare earth model that can go into ESRI or can go into a government database, it's going to be $35,000 straight up. No OBJ, nothing like that. Just a point cloud that you can access, download that material and upload it to other places. Now, if you want photogrammetry, there's building involved. We're talking 2 days of work. We're talking 2 weeks of processing. You know, you got to ask yourself what that time is worth to you. Are you going to outsource, you know, the processing, which in some cases we outsource our processing here. We've got a great team. I think he's out of Northern Colorado and he's moving to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Bastard. Anyway,
that's okay.
Good for him. I'm just jealous. So anyway,
yeah, no kidding.
There are so many things that could be done. And I think having multiple packages and then having options of like, okay, if you want an OBJ, here's why you'd want an OBJ. You want to upload it into SolidWorks. You want to do this. Like, another thing is, are they going to use this material in something like Civil 3D? You know, okay, well, then we've got to upload it into Recap. We've got to change the file type, process that, and give you your output. That's going to be X number of dollars more.
All I'm hearing here is spend the time up front making 100% sure, or 99.9%, that you understand what they want. What is their goal with this information? Because they might have a goal that's over here, and by the time you're finished talking to them, they realize maybe they even have the wrong goal, meaning that conversation up front is so critical, and take the time to do that right.
Yeah.
And dig.
Yeah. You really also need to see how much the client understands what they're asking for without insulting them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, that's really important.
Definitely don't want to insult them. That's right.
So,
but I hear what you're saying. I mean, you don't want to kind of make them feel dumb, but and I think no matter what you're doing from a service-oriented perspective, obviously you're the one with the expertise, so you have to be careful not to talk down to somebody. It's more about serving them and making sure you give them what they want.
Yeah, like asking questions like, you know, I understand you want to map and model this area. What are you looking to do with the data? Because it's going to highly affect how I acquire the data and how we process the data.
Right.
You know, are you trying to get measurements? Are you trying to use this for a topographical map? Are you trying to do a simple orthomosaic? You know, are you looking for a lifelike model?
And why? Mm-hmm. The answer to all those questions might say, yeah, I want to do that. But then, okay, well, why do you want to do that? I want to make sure that that's actually the best thing for what you're trying to accomplish.
Yes.
So those kinds of questions thrown back at them.
Definitely. And, you know, the pricing can vary widely based on the deliverable, but also based on, based on a lot of other stuff. So I think it's, you know, are you using LiDAR? Are you using photogrammetry? Another thing is if you really want to speed up the time for photogrammetry, I would recommend using some type of home-built fixed wing, which is another thing that I've been looking at. I've been talking a lot to John McBride about that, about what's, you know, the best option, because there are coaxial setups out there, coaxial drones that are essentially VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing, but can fly, you know, long distances. And then the next problem that you run into is BVLOS. Because they say you're supposed to keep the drone line of sight, which is literally like, okay, I have really good vision, and I've literally been like, okay, how long can I track the drone until I really can't see it anymore? Or if I look away for a second, I can't find it again. It's like 2,500 feet, and that's like the very maximum.
So then in that case, if I remember right, we've actually talked about this in a previous podcast, you can get VOs, right, that are out beyond where you can see and they can kind of take over for you?
Oh, I thought we did a show on this.
We did.
I remember even asking the FAA too. I think that if the VO is able to communicate with the pilot, and let's say the VO is 1,000 feet out and you've got a radio and you guys can communicate like instantaneously, I think that's okay. But I would have to go back and look at my notes. So don't quote me on that. But anyway, guys, I think that's going to do it for us today. Remember, if you have a question, go to askdroneu.com. If you want to become a member and learn these complex mapping moves, well, good news, the course is out. And also, the course is not out. It's actually coming out this week. Also, we've got 12 in-person mapping classes coming out this year in 2018. Now, I know some other guys are teaching people how to use drone deploy. That's effing fantastic. But if you want good facade detail, you want to do complex maps that take multiple flight plans, you want to map in complex environments, and you want to do large scale maps, you're going to have to go deeper than that. And that's a DroneU difference, because we teach from experience. So we actually teach you from what we've learned out in the field, doing real world jobs, getting paid to do it. Now, here's the thing. You can learn from our mistakes, and you can also learn to get higher quality detail and maintain the competitive advantage. So make sure to check out the updates. They will be on the website in January on when those classes are going to be and where they are going to be. We are going to be doing some East Coast stuff. So celebrate. But I'm a warm body, so it's probably going to be down south. Sorry, New York City. Anyway, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
This is Ask DroneU.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the DroneU.